Hi, my name is Martin Purnell, and welcome to Off Grid Christianity, a weekly podcast for those who do or don't go to church, and for those who are just disillusioned. On today's Off Grid Christianity, oh, and by the way, we are now on Facebook. Yes, Facebook. It's taken us 20-odd weeks, but we're now on Facebook. So just go to Off Grid Christianity and leave a message, etc. Anyway, back to reality again. On today's Off Grid Christianity is a gentleman who in 1998 received the Coming Up Taller Award, which dates back to 1923. But what was this award for, which he received at the White House? Today's guest was also the artist in residence at the Cleveland School of Arts, where he founded YARD, which is an acronym for Youth at Risk Dancing. But what does that actually mean? And what is INLET, which he founded in 2001 and has earned international reputation for artistic and educational programming excellence? And does he know his Monge 2 from his tutu? We better find out as I welcome today's special guest to Off Grid Christianity, Bill Wade. Bill, thank you very much indeed for joining us, sir. Where are we speaking to you from?
Cleveland, Ohio, in America.
Gotcha. That's sort of right of middle, isn't it? Or ish.
Yeah, it's to the right of the middle, right part Great Lakes, right below Lake Erie.
Listen, thank you so much for joining us. And for those that want to contact us, you can as well on OGC. At accessradio.biz. That's OGC at accessradio.biz, and we'd love to hear from you. But before we go into all those questions that need answering, young Bill, I have five important questions for you. Are you sitting comfortably?
I am.
Right, fingers on a buzzer, no conferring then. Question number one. If you could invite anybody from history for an evening meal, alive or dead, so that you could ask them questions, who would it be?
All right, I've been thinking about this, and I have three possibilities.
Go for it.
That's allowed. All right, the first one, first person that popped in my head, it was Bono.
Yep.
I was like, that would be a cool chat.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like, speaking of outliers and, you know, off-grid, I just thought that would be a really interesting conversation. The other person that I thought about was, it'd be cool to sit down with Paul, you know, who wrote most of the New Testament, because he's really smart. And I think that he spent most of his time also being an outlier, going into places where, you know, a lot of Jews would go.
Yes.
And then the third person, because of what I do for a living, is there's an American guy named Ted Shawn, who was the founder of like the Men in Dance movement in America, where and then between 1933 and 1939, he had an all-male American modern dance group of men, and they toured all over America. And he is very eloquent, very well-educated man, founder of Jacob's Pillow, which has become sort of the pinnacle of the modern dance world.
Okay.
On the East Coast. And I think that would be a really fascinating conversation. It's because of his work, I have a career. Many, many, many years later.
Well, we'll hear about that later on. You keep going on about outlier. What do you mean by an outlier, please?
People who don't fit in the norm at all.
Uh-huh.
There's a famous book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. When I read the book and I put the book down, I was like, I just discovered myself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I grew up artistically wired in America. And I grew up all over America from everywhere outside of Philly all the way down to Southern California. And I was always the new kid, and I never fit in because they didn't do the guy stuff. I was always drawing and painting or singing, or the artistic thing was very thick in me. There was no denying it. So in America, when you're a dude, but you have that kind of wiring, you're given a lot of labels that you have to unferret later on in your life. So yeah, outlier. Somebody who's outside of the norm.
Gotcha, as opposed to someone that is an outright liar, which is totally...
<'Cause> yes.
Because there'll be people saying, you saying that about Bono? You can't say that about St. Bono of Dublin. Yes. So,
he's, you know, again, you kind of look at him in his career, you know, as far as being a believer, but also being in that industry. I can relate to that because I also have like a marketplace calling on what I do. As opposed to doing what I do in the church.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, if you do get a chance to cook him a meal, please invite me over, because that was actually, that's always been on one of my lists ever since I've been
a manager.
Yeah. I've always had this thing about drinking a glass or two of his wine out of his wine cellar and
asking him
certain questions.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but one of my questions would be, why were you only on stage at Bristol Locarno to about 1,200 people, I was one of them, for your October tour? That included Encore Bono. What was that about, please?
Wow.
Yeah. That's about as hard as I get mine, but he'd be going, oh no, not having him round if he's going to ask me that. Great. Question two. Who is your favourite biblical character or favourite biblical story or favourite parable, please, Bill?
I'm going to go with the dude named Bezalel, who I know that Randy Flynn talked to you about.
He did.
When I heard it, I just listened to it yesterday. I was like, gosh darn it. Man, Randy, dude. Why you got to do that? But again, here's what's interesting, and here's why. He is the first dude in the Bible ever being mentioned of being filled with the Holy Spirit, and he was a craftsman. He was an artist.
Right.
So I think the creator of everything, the first person he fills with his Holy Spirit, and what we learn about that through Scripture, is this dude named Bezalel, who designed and constructed like the Ark of the Covenant, the Tent of the Meetings, and just all kinds of stuff. And I think that would be a really, really interesting conversation, right? Because I think nowadays, if you're a believer, but you're also an artist professionally, in America with my medium of dance, or dance, however you want to say it, I'm not like the men in my neighborhood. They don't do what I do for a living, and they all look at me kind of sideways. Mm. I've been married for 30 years. I got a kid who's grown, living in LA, and but my wife and I are both artists. Our son is an artist, and we just got the art thing real thick.
Yeah.
In the gene pool, right? So, I think it would be a really cool conversation because, for a really, really long time, the arts were not welcome in the church in mainstream America, and so I had to learn the art of dance apologetics, among other things, to kind of survive.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that having a conversation with Bezalel would be really cool.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
His name's been mentioned twice in 2 weeks now, so I think I better do some homework on him.
There's a great book. There's a great book about him. One of the world scholars actually lives in UK right now. Chris John Otto wrote a book about Bezalel. I'm actually rereading it for the second time right now. That might be why it's in my head.
Ah, right. Well, Chris, bless his heart, was on a previous episode, episode 10 or 11. Yeah.
Okay.
Have a listen. Be interesting to see if he chose Bezalel. I can't remember. But
he's another buddy that I've had more than one Guinness with, actually. Well,
there seems to be a thing going on here.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. If you were president, or you could be prime minister for the day, you can choose, right? If you're prime minister or president for the day and could change any law or impose a new law, what would it be, Bill?
I would love to gift everybody in America a day of having a transformational art experience.
Oh.
Whatever medium.
Okay.
But if I had the ability to gift everybody or in the UK, it would be a transformative experience, hopefully orchestrated by the Lord through an art medium for them. How cool would that be to be in a practice for an entire day with the creator while you're creating, doing a little creator thing?
Wow.
That's, there's no way I would ever want to be prime minister or president.
Yeah, but think all the free food you get. No. Or the free football tickets. You see?
Yeah, maybe. If that's a thing.
I'm sure it is. Okay, forget about all the bodyguards that'd be around you, but
Oh gosh, yeah. And having been to the White House, it was very, very stressful.
We'll hear about that in a minute. I'm very interested. I'm very interested. Question four. Outside of family events, Bill, what has been your most enjoyable day out to date?
This is going back several years, but I was the artist from the state of Ohio here in America, selected to do an international artist exchange. And I ended up flying to Easter Island with a big stone Moai heads on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was there for about a week, and I met. And, my purpose there was to find an artist on the island that I thought I could do an exchange with, and you know, months later have them come to Cleveland and hang out, do the thing. And I met a guy named Akahanga Raputuki. Mm-hmm. Called him Aka because it was easier.
Yeah, it is a bit.
And his family line were the dancers on the island.
Okay.
And so we brought him over, and the exchange went so well. I ended up, my entire company went to Easter Island.
Wow.
We were there for 2 weeks, and it was interesting because the very first day that we had time, once we were there, got settled, and you know, we were living with folks all over the island, and we got settled and into a space where we could have our own rehearsal because we were going to perform an entire concert for everybody. And I did a warm up with my dancers, and there's a thing that we do called a reverence at the end of a dance class. You do a reverence, which is sort of like, it's honoring the time that you've been given, the space that you've been given. You're honoring each other, and it's like a thank you, it's a gratitude.
Okay,
thing.
Yeah.
And mine is physical, but it's actually me praying over my dancers. And, you know, we're freaking in Easter Island having a rehearsal together. And I'm kind of lightweight freaking out, pretending that I'm not. And I'm like praying over the dancers. And all of a sudden, I just like literally felt the Lord's presence in the room with us. And it was an epic experience. So that's the first thing that pops to my mind with that question, is that experience on the island that I had no business being on.
Yeah.
But the Lord wanted us there, and it was an incredible, I mean, the whole 2 weeks obviously was incredible, but that moment right after, during reverence, after the very first company class, it was pretty beautiful.
Wow. That is brilliant. Brilliant. And of course they have Easter eggs every day, of course, over
there. Yes.
Question 5, what has been your most embarrassing moment then, Bill?
I don't embarrass easily. Mm-hmm. That might be bad.
No.
But I had, so when I was in my 20s, back in the 1980s, and I was on tour with the Modern Dance Company, one of the pieces that I was in this concert we were doing somewhere in North or South Carolina, I can't remember where we were, there was a piece that I was in where the character I was portraying, it was a comedy piece, and the character I was portraying was a thief dressed as an old lady on a park bench.
Right.
And part of the bow after the piece is over, the audience is cracking up and whatever, you did your bow. Part of the bow is the guy next to me throws my skirt that I had on to my ankles. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that particular night, he grabbed everything I had on and pulled it to the floor. So I'm standing there buck naked for a split second, and the audience just lost it. And I think most people would be really embarrassed by that, but I thought instantly it hit me like, okay, that just happened, and I don't know any of these people and they don't know me. So I turned my back to the audience and walked off the stage. But I think that should have been more embarrassing than it was.
Yes.
So that's going to be my answer. Is that bad?
It's embarrassing, but it's not bad, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it was. And I found out he did it on purpose.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because male dancers, underneath your dance gear, you're wearing what's called a dance belt. And it's kind of like a dancer's jock strap. It's built more like a thong.
Right.
And he just grabbed everything, just yanked it down to my ankles. And I didn't even have to look down. It was just suddenly there was a breeze. And I was like, oh, man. And it's a moment that's choreographed to shock people.
Yeah, yeah.
But he just decided that night he was going to actually shock people.
All right.
Because I had briefs on underneath the thing.
Yes.
Underneath the skirt, but he pulled all of it down. So that was just in a full Monty kind of like moment.
And this is where you then test. And that person then turned out to be John Travolta or something like that.
No, it was just a buddy of mine. There was banter backstage later.
Yeah, I bet it was. I bet it was. Listen, thanks so much for that. And before we go further on, I think it's only fair to actually clear up, because we never did this with Randy, because we went off on a complete different tangent. What is modern dance, and how does that compare to ballet and everything else, please?
Okay. I'm going to give you the description that I give to, like, we do a lot of education programming in the company that I direct. And ballet is a cultural art form from Western Europe.
Okay.
a lot of people in America, the vast majority, came from people from Western Europe. So it's really, you know, so most people in America, if you're Caucasian, ballet is the thing that you is like, that's where the bar is set. Until right. about 100 years ago, back when everybody was thinking America, you know, what is American literature? What is American painting? What is American music? What is American dance? And American modern dance started, Lou St. Dennis, Ted Shawn, Martha Graham, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So my particular lineage, because A, I came to dance much later. I was first year at the university at 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And I actually got to university for my art, painting, drawing.
Oh, okay.
I was interested in animation because I wanted my artwork to move. I tried sculpture when I was younger. I didn't like the fire. I was not a fan of, you know, playing with the fire, and that's kind of unavoidable if you're going to be a sculptor. So literally on the day that they walked the pods of freshmen around the college campus, this is where you're going to eat lunch. This is where you're going to, you know, here's your dorm, here's your, you know, fine arts building. There was a modern dance class happening. And I later found out that the man that was teaching modern dance happens to be a very, very famous modern dancer. He was the protege for Jose Limon, Jose Limon's company named Clyde Morgan. Long story short, Clyde became like my dad for 2 years.
I
had this weird realization. I'm standing on the door watching this very, you know, beautiful movement and African drums in the corner. Drummers, and I had this moment of recognizing the medium that I was actually supposed to be pursuing.
Yes.
And it didn't make sense to me, but modern dance is sort of like the American concert art form that in Europe, ballet is very, very popular. Ballet is very popular here too, because there's just so many white people here.
Yeah, yeah.
But the difference is that it's like an American art. So like in Europe, it would be people like Mary Wigman, Pina Bausch. It's just a whole different. I know Ballet Rambert does a lot of modern work, actually.
Right, I've heard of that.
And others. So it's just American modern dance is one of the distinctives. It starts in the torso, because if you think about modernism and painting and the connection to the emotions and how you feel is what you throw on the canvas, like action paintings. The movement starts in the torso and works its way out through the limbs, whereas ballet is very external. It's very long lines going through space. So it's just a whole different thing. We're barefoot because we're rebelling from the ballet thing, you know. And in my company, we climb on each other for a living. So I had a dude, there's a dance series every year in our city, and the theater that holds us annually asks my company, Inlet Dance Theater, to participate. And there was 1 year during intermission at a concert, this white guy in a suit came up to me and he's like, "Are you the choreographer?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Are you the director of the company?" I was like, "Yeah." "You good?" And he said, "Man, my wife dragged me to this thing. I was just at work. It was a Friday night. He was tired. He had a suit on." And he's like, "But I'm loving this stuff." He said, "This stuff is like, I was not expecting to have so much fun tonight." He's like, "It's like a ballet company and Cirque du Soleil got married and had a baby, and that's you guys."
Oh, really?
And wow. I was like, "That's actually a really good description."
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to use that. If you're cool with that, go get your beer, you know?
Yeah.
It was cool. I was like, wow, I never would have put that together, but it literally describes what we do.
Thank you. So if
I mean, hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's beginning to. I mean, you're talking to Mr. Ignoramus here when it comes to anything to do with art, you know.
Okay.
Actually, yeah.
Music come down.
Well, music to me, really. I wouldn't call that an art form. I would just call it's music. It's from the soul. It's
so is dancing.
Well, that's what I'm hoping you're going to convince me of, really. That's
People dance before they had language.
Very true.
Yep.
Very
every
true.
Every little bebe you put out, they put on some music and they start moving their body because it's instinctual to part of being human. Anywhere you land on the planet, there are people dancing there.
Yeah.
It'll look different depending on where you land.
Yeah.
But it's universal. And what's cool about it, it's not language based. So when you're dealing with populations from somewhere else, mm-hmm. that are in your audience, because it's movement, it's a little bit more universal from that band. Unless, of course, you have text in your, you know, sound score or whatever.
Yes. No, I get that. I did think I, when we were talking to Randy a few weeks ago, I think I mentioned to him The Red Shoes, the film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
with Maura Shearer. And it's one of the classic British films of all time. Right. And I hadn't watched it until about 3-4 months ago. I was absolutely blown away.
I haven't seen that. I should find that somewhere and watch it again.
Absolutely blown away. But that's more ballet, but then it comes into modern dance as well, because they tell a story. So talking of telling stories, I'd like to know more about Yard, please, and what that involved and how you ended up at the White House.
Yeah, that was weird and really stressful. So when I quit the Modern Dance Company I was talking about earlier, there was an article in the paper that I, you know, stepped out, and I got a phone call. Here's what's weird. I was in my apartment at the time. I was single at the time. I have the Bible open, and I'm having this kind of deep conversation with the Lord, and I was like, I performed in my 20s at a time where the marketplace is particularly cruel. And like the dance world was, the way dancers were treated was unkind. Yeah, like I had a ballet trainer, and at one of the places where I danced, you know, hit me with a stick because my leg wasn't high enough. You know, that's like old school training, right? And he was a Brit too, and that was not coffee in that mug. But anyway, he knew his stuff, but he was. He was not a warm, fuzzy person.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So when I quit dance, and I knew that the Lord told me to go into it, but I was having this conversation with the Bible up and being like, you know, like, I know you told me to do this. I did this. I did this for 7 years. I'm good. I had 3 years of training prior to that. So I've given you 10. I was opening a portion of scripture, which I'll totally paraphrase probably incorrectly. Basically, the harvest is plenty and the workers are few. Who's going to go? And I was like, send me. You know what? This dance stuff, like, this is painful. These people are mean as spit. I'm out. The phone rings, and I'm like, I'll be right back. Hold that thought. You know, I answered the phone, and it was the principal from this inner city school called Cleveland School of the Arts. Huh. I go down. He talks me into coming down and doing a couple of master classes in his, I'm using air quotes, dance department.
Yeah.
So I go down there and I go into the dance studio, which was beautiful, this really beat up old building, which was kind of cool. The kids didn't know what a leotard was. They're like, who are you? And I'm, you know, I had just stopped touring. I was like, you know, 10% body fat, long hair, you know, this little hippie dude walking in and saying, you know, change your clothes, get into your leotards and tights. I'm here to teach master class. Let's do this. They didn't know what a leotard was. And so I was kind of like the token white guy in the room.
Mm.
And in my 2 weeks there, I fell in love with the kids. This is like, you know, super urban America in the 90s. Now we're in the 90s. Mass incarceration became the new for-profit business in America. Gang violence. We had over 90 gangs in Cleveland alone. It was rough. Yeah. It was a rough spot. But all of these kids had to audition to get in this school, right? So there was like, these kids, their background was rough, but they had hearts of gold. And some of these kids were so talented, it was ridiculous.
Yes.
Whether it was singing or like the singing in that building was just, it'd make you cry. And the instrumental music and film and photography and theater. And I ended up staying past the 2 weeks, and I stayed there for 11 years because the kids and the Lord just put an anointing on my work in the space. And you know, I found out a lot of these kids are Christians, which totally rocked my world. And I was like, all right, let's give you some real training. You've got the talent. That's not the problem. Let's do some real training. So I started an after school program for the boys. I mean, these kids got out of school at 2:45 in the afternoon, mm-hmm. right? 2:45 PM school's over because they started freaking early. That was an adjustment.
Yeah.
But the building was open until like 6 because they had to clean it or whatever. And I was like, I was still doing guest performing around the country as a soloist. So I would stay after school and rehearse what I needed to do for the next time I went out of town or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And all of a sudden, one little dude sitting in the corner, can I watch? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, what's up? My name's, you know, Bill. My name's Paul. Nice to meet you. He became like a son to me. Then he had a bunch of friends. All of a sudden, I've got a bunch of dudes hanging out after school, doing improvisational work with movement. They start telling me their stories. And I'm like, well, how does it make you feel? Show me with your body how that feels. Turned into an after-school program for boys called Youth at Risk Dancing. Because at-risk kids, inner ring, inner city urban kids in America, well, I think post-pandemic, almost all kids are at risk of something. As the education system's falling apart. But at the time, I just started this after-school program. I would shut the doors and like try to be quiet so that I wouldn't get in trouble. And then there was an organization attached to the school that was a nonprofit organization. They rose money for guest artists to be in the building. And the woman that was the executive director of that nonprofit, friends of Cleveland School of the Arts, pulled me aside. And she was Dutch Indonesian, so she had this fabulously dramatic accent. And she said, you know, what you're doing with these boys after school could get funding. We could pay you basically to do this with these boys. I happen to know that some of them, their grades are going up, and that's like gold around here. So keep doing what you're doing. I'll keep you out of trouble. I'm going to sit you down with a grant writer. She's going to ask you questions. We'll find you money. You'll have a job. So I was like, cool. These kids are awesome. So
is that what a Dutch Indonesian person sounds like?
That's what her name is, Urgenie, and that's literally what she sounds like. But I'm forgetting like the cigarette.
Oh, you got to have a cigarette. Yeah.
She was just a human chimney. But anyway. So I ended up there for 11 years and changed the dance department. Kids ended up going to Juilliard. I've got some of them still call me dad. Wow. And yeah, it was crazy. But I ended up at the White House because somebody called from D.C. Asking me a bunch of questions about what are you doing? What is it called? You know, what is it called? And tell us about that. And we're hearing the kids are going from, you know, flunking out to getting straight A's. And I was like, well, you know, if you meet a child where they are with the wiring that they've been given upon design, they're going to thrive. Like, why? This is kind of a duh. Like, why is this getting attention, really? And they were like, but you're Caucasian and they're all African American. And I'm like, no, I got one Puerto Rican boy. But I was kind of surprised, you know, that ended up garnering the attention of a very famous modern dance company called Palabolas. They've been touring the world for 50 years at this point now.
Now, people would know that I can see you. You could tell by my reaction. I've never heard of it.
That's okay. Palabolas is a very, very famous modern dance company from America. And was started with four male students at Dartmouth College who were taking their arts and humanities credit, and they took a dance class because the new teacher was a woman and it was traditionally a male school. She was beautiful. She's a bunch of jocks in the class.
They started
creating in a way that was breaking all of the rules because they didn't know what the rules were because they came into it so late. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, that sounds really familiar to me. Because I was creating everything with the kids, the boys, basically telling their life stories, which were, you know, kind of heavy, using movement. So the first time I put something on the stage was called Children Without Fathers. None of these boys had a dad except for one. And there was like 30 kids hanging out with me after school at that time. It got bigger than that, which was frightening. But we just started creating collaboratively together. Allison Chase, who's the person who was that woman that was teaching at Dartmouth, heard about this rogue modern dance guy hanging out in the hood and that it was going well. And she thought, that sounds really familiar, except that he's in the other extreme end of the economic bracket. And I'm really curious. So she flew out. We hit it off. And I love Palabolas' work because it's super sculptural and people climb on each other and they... it's like playing Legos with your bodies and you make all kinds of things. Yeah. It's like that. So we ended up having a 7-year working relationship where she mentored me. And that was after the woman that I danced with in the 80s, who was from New York. And in 2001, so I ended up at the White House because I was part of this landmark study called Coming Up Taller. Basically, person that wrote the study was able to quantify the fact that arts programming is transformative and actually changes and saves lives. And so I ended up being in the inaugural group of people at the artists at the White House. I was the only choreographer. Yeah. And they were really smart about these 10 people, because they was like, you know, one painter, one poet, one choreographer, me, one of everything. And that's back when President Hillary Clinton was there. So I met her, Hillary. She came in. She's tiny. And
oh, really?
I was shocked. She came and I was like, oh, I'm not the tallest guy in the world. And I was like, you just sold. And then she shook my hand. I'm like, okay, she's got a physical trainer. This woman's handshake was like an NFL player. it was quite amazing. And I'm like, boy, you're just a walking dichotomy. Look at you. So, I mean, it was super stressful. I had two of my boys with me.
Oh, wow.
Both of them ended up dancing in really famous dance companies. And one of them is now a voiceover artist and an actor. And he's flying in and out of Cleveland all the time to Hollywood, being in movies. And,
would we know who he was? Have you mentioned him?
No. His name is Leilani Barrett. He's kind of under the radar, which is code for he actually works all the time. nobody know who he is, right?
Yeah.
And then the other one is Antonio was really, he was just a kid when I took him to the White House with me. And we went with the principal of the schools, the nicest guy. And Antonio has since toured all over the world, went to Juilliard on a full ride, and now has his own company.
Yeah, you keep mentioning Juilliard. For those, obviously, this side of the pond, we might have heard of it as a...
Oh.
But tell us more about what Juilliard actually is then. Very briefly.
So the Juilliard School is probably the pinnacle of conservatory training.
Okay.
In dance, in music, and fine arts. So their dance departments, like if you can actually get into Juilliard, is an amazing feat. If you can graduate from Juilliard and you know, stay through the course of it, then you got your stuff together.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. These kids are world-class, like in the dance department, they're world-class choreographers. A guy that's currently the artistic director of Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater is a Juilliard grad, for example. Mm. So Juilliard is it's like the pinnacle.
Yeah. So
I've had like four kids there.
It's like being, it's like being at Oxford University for the arts then, is it? That sort of
thing. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, yeah, so that's, I had to go to the White House and get a plaque and, you know.
Wow.
It was stressful.
Wow.
I just wanted to be back home in rehearsal with the kids.
Yeah.
If I'm honest.
It's a great accolade, isn't it?
It is, and when it was happening, I didn't fully understand what a big deal it was. I was just watching a bunch of adults act like this is a way bigger deal than I'm.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not understanding it. I'm glad it happened. I mean, it turned out, I knew the Lord had me there for a reason. I ended up speaking that morning on NPR, National Public Radio, which is sort of like the non-profit free radio
BBC.
Around America. Yeah, it's like BBC.
Yeah.
So that was weird. I'm like, why? I mean, there's 10 of us. Why am I the one on the radio? This is, but I also at the same time, I sensed the Lord's hand on me. Like, okay, now I want you to go over here and talk to them. Now I want you to go over here and meet all these people and the president and whatever.
Yeah.
So it was crazy to think that actually happened.
Well, I'm going to take you off-piste now, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Because you've mentioned quite a bit already, you know, how many Christians there are, you know, within the arts, certainly in the modern dance world.
Not many.
But when you were there, you know, you see there seems to be quite a few, and there's quite a few dance groups now that are Christian-based. What's it like to be a Christian in the arts today?
It's interesting because I've got a lot of friends of mine who are believers who are also in my field, like Randall Flynn that you talked to recently.
Yeah.
And each of those people has a very specific and unique and distinct calling. So mine is specifically to the marketplace of the dance world. My audiences are like, most people don't even know that I happen to be a Christian. Wow. I was doing a Zoom call actually with Chris John Otto And he knew who I was because he used to live in Northeast Ohio. And in the Zoom call, he was like, I'm surprised that you're on here. I didn't realize that you were a Christian. I'm very familiar with your company. I had no idea. I'm like, yeah, well, I'm not running around smacking people with a Bible in the head either. So, I mean, you know, it's not my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The Lord called me to be a professional dancer and become a choreographer and run a company that glorified his name and furthered his kingdom. And I'm trying really hard to do all of those things.
Yeah.
And but it can be weird because I'm not in the Bible Belt. So I'm in, you know, and Cleveland is like the easternmost portion of, you know, the East Coast of America.
Mm-hmm.
So the atmosphere is very non-Christian. The atmosphere is very kind of cold and very, very liberal. And it's, you know, it's, that's my tribe though, right? I mean, those are my people and I totally get around, I get along with them. I was on a Zoom earlier today where somebody running an arts institution said, well, I've heard you're Switzerland, you get along with everybody, can I ask you something, kind of a thing. And so that, I have that sort of like, you know, I'm Switzerland, I'm the neutral person in town. So everybody tells me they're junk, and I'm like, I don't need to know this stuff. But it's interesting because I have decisions that I make that are totally based on what I feel like the Lord is asking me to do and be obedient to that. And you know, it raises some eyebrows sometimes. People are like, you know, why don't you let the dancers in your company have sex with each other? There's a rumor that I literally have one of the other directors of one of the other companies in town call me and ask me this. And she said, I heard this rumor that, you know, you don't let them have, you know, romantic relationships with each other. And I'm like, that's not a rumor. It's in writing in the contract. Like, nah. And she was like, well, how are you able to do that? I'm like, look, we climb on each other all day long for a living. And it's weird if two of those are together and they come in and they had a fight the night before or whatever. And she's like, because she had prefaced it with, you know, I've got people in my company and they're all coupled up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, okay, so how's that going for you, actually? Let's unpack this a little bit. How's that going? And then she told me horror stories. She's so like, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, this is terrible. I was like, okay, this is hard enough and there's no money. Why would I add that stressor to my life? Like that, you know, slash, I didn't even get into my faith walk with her. She was already freaked out by the fact that I actually had a written rule about, like, you know.
But in today's society, where everyone sues everybody else or whatever, I'm offended, hasn't that, can't you be taken to court for that?
Not yet. but what's interesting is I'm very clear about having a culture of honor in the studio, and that anybody, and we finally have a home for the first time, my company's 22 years old,
mm-hmm.
and we renovated a really big old nasty factory and filled it full of arts organizations and health and human service organizations that are outward focused for the community.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's embedded in a neighborhood, which is, you know, one of the roughest neighborhoods in the city. And I'm finding just more and more beautiful young people and old people and middle-aged people like me in the neighborhood that, like, you got to asset map a neighborhood rather than fear it.
Yeah.
And realize these are all people that are made in his image. And they're like reflections of the Lord. And yeah, the neighbor's got a really bad rap because some schmucks did stupid stuff. I think that, like, people are really clear. And I'm kind of known in town as, like, the white guy that works with, you know, people of brown and black people and have for decades.
Yes.
And you know, having said that, right, ironically, right now, the company members, I've got six that are currently in the company, they're all Caucasian because pandemic, I had a mass exodus. Because, you know, professional dancers, the clock is ticking, your body only lasts so long,
yeah,
and the money sucks. And so when the pandemic hit, we were shut down for 2 years. A bunch of them pivoted to do something else for a living. And I had a mixed race company at the moment. But that's also when George Floyd kind of went down and America had race riots. I'd like to call it something else, but they turned into riots. Mm-hmm. They were protests that turned into riots, and it was awful. So what I watched in the arts world, particularly and dance companies, modern dance companies in particular, all the black kids ran and started creating work together. All the white kids were left where they were. Latinx kids are like, you know, we exist too. I mean, it just polarized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Culturally. And I'm seeing things that are happening differently now, finally, as we're all trying to get away from the pandemic and find whatever a new normal is, whatever that means. But yeah, it's interesting. I love going down and teaching for Randall Flynn, for example, because he's in Houston. He's smack in the middle of the Bible Belt. And you can just talk about the Lord in the middle of a dance class and nobody bats an eyelash.
Yeah.
You can't do that up here. You just can't do that. You know, so living it out, living your walk out, living, you know, authentically and without judgment of other people that aren't. I'm like, of course they live that way. They don't even know the Lord yet.
Yeah.
Kind of the point of the company, right? So more than half my dancers do know the Lord. And everybody's walk is in a completely different place. And I've got dancers in my studio from all over the country. And they've moved to Cleveland to be a part of this thing. And some of them are believers and some of them are not.
Yes.
But it's, you know, how you know, they will know that you are mine by the way you love one another.
Yes.
You know, and if we're doing that in the studio and we're actually known for that, people will, like booking agents and stuff, will hire the company because of the technical acumen and the quality, the creativity of the work. But they'll bring us back because of the interaction and that we're, you know, servanthood leadership is what it's all about.
I'm going to ask you more about that, but just to clear something up, imagine I was a really super fit 21-year-old, right?
Yeah.
And I come to sit for an audition and you realize that I am, in fact, the world's greatest dancer that ever lived. Yeah, you've got to imagine it. Okay.
I'm there. This has happened to me.
And I know my Monge 2 from my 2-2, I'm telling you. But within a week, it turns out that every single girl in there fancies me, right? And there's a rumor going around that I'm actually going out with the lead girl. What would you do? Apart from
I've been in a situation, I sat the dude down. I was like, you have a decision to make. This planet is covered with gorgeous women. You just can't touch the ones in the studio. End of discussion. I ended up getting rid of him.
Oh, really?
Yep, because he did. Yet I was like, here's the deal. You're talented, but I can go to New York and buy talent and bring it back with me. So this is the reality in the industry.
Yeah.
There's thousands of really talented dancers working in restaurants and bars in New York City that would love to have a job with the company. Wow. I can go there. It's a 90-minute flight. I've done it before. And you know, I'll come back with somebody, you know. And I was like, bruh, you know, I'm not telling you that you can't touch women outside the studio, because that's, I don't really have that jurisdiction. But inside my company and inside these walls, I'm the founder of the company, man. So my rule is law here. And if you can't be, you need to respect the people that are here who said yes and amen to that rule. And you're not, you got to go. So I got rid of him. I said, you, here's the thing. I'm not kicking you out. You kicked yourself out because you made that choice. And I'm keeping her because she's a better dancer than you. Sorry, cuz he gets to go. It was rough.
Yeah.
It broke my heart because I loved it. Like, he was like a son to me too.
Yeah.
It broke my, I cried a lot. But a rule's a rule.
No, I get that.
Yeah, it was rough.
Well, it's just as well I decided to carry on dancing then, wasn't it, really? To But yes, that's some sort of thing that most people go, yeah, how do you deal with it? You've just told us. That bloke, whatever happened to him, do you know?
So here's the weird thing. That was years ago.
Yeah.
Last weekend, my wife and I are like running around doing Christmas shopping. I run into the dude's mother.
No.
A week. In a store, like we just stood there and looked at each other, and she's like looking at me weird, and I'm looking at her weird, and I'm like, man, you look so familiar to me. And then she like looked me up and down on the gear I had on, and I
the ballet shoes gave it away.
Yeah, no, we dance barefoot. I always wear flip flops.
Okay.
Even in the cold, because I'm going to be barefoot when I get to work. So why would I wear shoes? You know? And so. She looked down and then she looked back up at me really funny. And I'm like, I'm so-and-so's mom. And then we had this like, I was like, I'm the guy who runs Inlet. And we had this like big hug. We're like, oh my gosh, it's so good to see you. And I was like, where's your boy now? He's married, just had twins, living in San Diego, California.
Wow.
I had no idea. I was like, what? That's crazy. it was fun to see her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And has he got a decent job?
I don't know. We didn't go there in the conversation. No. She was so focused on being a virtual grandma.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, this is such a beautiful conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when her son decided he wanted to be a professional dancer, she didn't like it so much. So I was the white devil for a while. And then she saw him on stage and she's like, oh, he's actually really good at this.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm not going to say yes to somebody who's not good at it naturally. Like, God gave him this gift. I'm here to form it and give him. He has a high capacity pile that he needs to turn into skills. And he needs to learn how to behave.
Yes.
And be kind and all of these other things. Culture of honor, right? And he learned the hard way.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You said something about servanthood as well. And I said, back to that.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me more, please.
Well, I just, you know, when I read the scriptures, it's really clear to me that you might have this gift and this gift and this gift. And this. There's always a so that after the list of gifts that the Holy Spirit gives people. And it's serving. I mean, Jesus came down here to serve humanity and paid the price for us, right? And then he rose from the dead to like abolish that whole thing. And like we're supposed, like love one another. Why is that so hard on this planet? I'm noticing that's a problem with the human beings have. And it's literally servanthood, like serve one another. And it's, you know, I think it's easier for me to see because the gift that I've been given is not like the most common gift. I'm not like an accountant or a doctor. I mean, those are gift acquisitions as well. But because mine is, you know, this dance thing, and the, you know, I make dancers and I make dances that they do based on what's going on in the community. And, I know that I've been given this thing. It's not about me. It's about using that thing to serve the community. It's serve others with it. You know, as soon as they walk in the door, be kind, honor them, serve them. They'll know your mind, but the way you love one another. And that doesn't say love other Christians necessarily right? It's just like, can you be motivated out of love for other human beings, even if they don't look anything? You didn't speak your language or whatever, you know, but in movement is everybody's language. So I got to head up on that one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, serving is everything. You know, I've had dancers over the years that like, they get sick of hearing that all the time. And I'm like, yeah, but like you jump track and you do something else for a living after, you know, 30 something or 40 something, guess what you're going to do? If you work at Starbucks, you're going to be serving coffee.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
How you go about that and the heart on the inside of it, right?
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. Well, in that case then, Off Grid Christianity, as you know, is a title of these podcasts. And I've got a feeling you really identify with that title. So in which case,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah. So at 18, I was actually in a choreography class at the university, studying under this very, very intelligent lady. And we had these notebooks that we're supposed to write in and then hand them in. I forgot that we're supposed to hand them in at the end of the semester so she could like check on your growth trajectory. I came to know the Lord when I was about 13, 14 years old in Southern California. And I lived, you know, other places since then. I ended up in Milwaukee at the university. And I'm in this composition class. I went there for art night and animation, and I ended up being a dance major and freaking my parents out a little bit. And especially my dad, he wasn't feeling that. That was a white guy in a suit. And I'm in composition class, and I hear the Lord's voice, which I was not walking with the Lord. It was totally me, like, off in some other direction, right? And I heard the Lord say very clearly, it was like silence. And it was like the most silent thing in my head is the way I can describe what it sounded like. And it was, you are going to be a professional dancer. You're going to learn to become a choreographer, and you will someday found and run a company that glorifies my name and furthers my kingdom purposes. And I was like, looking around, like, anybody else hear that? I was like, I wrote it down. I was like, this is weird. I'm having this. And I knew that it was the Lord, right? all these, and I got hella screwed up in the process of, you know, trying to become an adult. Coming up for me was rough. My family life was not exactly healthy. And so I had to unpack a lot of that when I was still dancing in the Modern Dance Company. We'd be like on tour and I'd come back and hit counseling and, you know, go on tour again and come back and hit counseling. Wow. I had acquired a lot of really toxic behaviors and attitudes and mindsets and things out of survival mode and fear, trying to survive.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so funny looking at all of that stuff now and looking back at this road that the Lord has taken me on. He's, for some reason, I think I'm so physically wired that the Lord used the physicality of dance and dance training and discipline and all of these things. That's how I learned. And then I would go to scripture and read the thing that I would just thought about in rehearsal that day when I was, you know, performing and stuff. So it's been this really interesting, I'm aware that it's through movement and through dance, first being a dancer, but then learning to be a trainer and then learning to be a choreographer and working with, you know, I was very blessed. I worked with some really famous people. And the entire time knowing I have no business being in this place because I started at 18 and I'm just like some dude that like can't not do art. And, you know, so I just ended up on this weird trajectory with it all. And it's been because back in the 80s, Christians didn't do dance.
Oh, really?
Oh, honey. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And I had well-meaning friends. Like I'm in this company, right? We're performing. They would go, you know, to the Iowa Theater. They would go downtown. To see me perform and do solos or whatever. And back in those days, modern dancers didn't wear a whole lot of clothing on stage and very, very little clothing on stage. Yeah. And I knew that and she was the woman I was working for at the time. She's a tyrant and she was known for being a tyrant. But the Lord told me to serve her. She's a Jewish woman from New York, not a warm fuzzy at all, old school training. She knew her stuff and she did not know how to treat people well. Mm-hmm. She tried, but she just wasn't. I think that it was that passion, that high level of passion and high level of execution with scarce resources turned her into a monster. And I had well-meaning Christian friends that were like, why don't you need to quit. You need to stop working for her. She's awful, da-da-da-da-da. She puts you on stage practically naked, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, I know that I'm doing exactly what the Lord's telling me to do. I think Nehemiah's boss was probably worse. By the way, just putting that out there, they didn't like that.
Yeah,
you
know.
And then years later, in the 90s, I met Clinton School of the Arts, a buddy of mine who was a soloist for Martha Graham. It's a long story how I know him. Anyways, I brought him to Cleveland to work with the Yard. And we were standing in my kitchen one night, and he was saying, yeah, I'm going down to Houston. My friend Randy's got a Christian dance company. And I laughed at him, and I was like, Steve, there's no such thing as a Christian dance company. I said, what is it like? Housewives wearing a lot of white fabric and waving flags around, or you know, he's like, no, these kids are like, he's like, they got the skills, they got the legs up here, they're twirling, the choreography is amazing. And I'm like, I don't want to be rude, but I don't believe me, man, because he was the only other Christian I knew in the entire industry.
Wow.
And he was in New York City. He was dancing for Martha Graham. So he gets on the phone, and he's like, Randy, I'm at Bill Wade's house. You guys haven't met yet, but Bill needs to come down and be one of the teachers this summer for the week. So I am flying down there and I see like legit world-class dance happening and all of the people on the stage knew the Lord. And I had a pretty significant meltdown.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it was heavy.
Because?
Yeah. I had been alone for so long as a Christian in my industry. And I remember during the middle of the AIDS crisis, I was in New York City because I was choreographing for an ice skater for the Olympics. It's a long story.
Yeah.
And I had lunch with Steve, my buddy. And I just remember sitting in this booth and he was like, bro, all of our friends are dying, you know? And he said, you know, I recently was having a conversation with the Lord. I was reading the scriptures in the quiet time. And the Lord said, reminded me the meek will inherit the earth. He's like, bro, that's you and me because all of our friends are dying and we're not going to go out that way. And I was like, oh, snap. I was like, I need to get me some skill. I need to get serious about the skills that I'm inheriting from these people that are like the top of the field.
Yeah.
Which is what I did from that moment on. And, you know, and then, so I meet Randy. So Randy's like the Moses of the church, large C, welcoming dance back in. We were at one of, and I would go down every year and teach for him for a week. And it was funny because a lot of these kids were like, he's from the world, you know, he's rough and tumble. I've heard him cuss. He likes to drink, he did whatever stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, I'm not from the Bible Belt, man. I'm from Cleveland. They call it Thieveland. I mean, it's like, I'm from the hood. It's just a different gig. And I have like well-meaning little ballerina come up. I love how gritty you are. I'd be like texting my dancer, like, man, I just got called gritty again. but since that time, there's been like this enormous wave of dancers coming to know the Lord and now running companies and running schools. And it's like, particularly in the Bible Belt in America. And so now there's Christians who are dancers all over, and many of them have a marketplace calling, and they're dancing at Elvin Ailey, and they're dancing at Juilliard, and they're dancing at American Ballet, ABT, American Ballet Theater, and some of the biggest companies. And, so we were in a moment, everybody was praying. It was kind of a charismatic moment that I was just kind of watching. I was in the room in Houston, and this dude stood up and he pointed to Randy. He said, "The Lord is calling you Moses." And then he expounded upon that. And then I was kind of relatively new still, right? And he turns and looks right at me, and I'm just sitting over in the corner, like trying to hide, like, yo, this is getting live in here. What's happening? And he points to me. He's like, "You." And I'm like, me? And he's like, "Yeah, stand up." And I stood up, and I was like, "What's up?" And he's like, "The Lord's calling you Joshua. Randy's job is to open the gate. You're going to inherit the land." And I was like, which Joshua? Because that sounds like a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So I prayed about it, and the Lord is like, your calling is in the marketplace. You don't have to be. I was feeling some kind of way about, like, I need to help the church, large C, and I tried a couple of projects, and it was a very horrible experience. And I was like, I don't think I have the grace for this. I now know that I don't have the grace for that. It's not my calling. Yeah. My calling is to be a Christian in the world, in the marketplace. And the answers of my company that are believers, that's their calling on their life, and that's why they're with me.
Yeah. But being an off-grid Christian as you were back in the 80s and 90s, what's it like in the 1920s? What's it like in the 2020s?
I don't know. It's different. I've learned to speak the language of the liberal world in which I thrive, right? And I've had the awkward conversation with somebody who's like, I'm trying to bring my authentic self to the workplace. And I'm like, so am I. I happen to be a Christian, and everything's okay unless you say that. But that's actually who I authentically am, so back at you. And that kind of shuts down the conversation, right? But, like, I think I have thicker skin, and I am, I'm stubborn. And
stubborn can be good.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's there's a good kind of stubborn. It's like, I'm going to listen to, the mindsets that are out there, and I've learned how to think critically, and I've learned how to really reason quickly, and improvisation is my thing. So, I'm good there, but because I hear comments that I'll be in meetings that have got nothing to do with it, but somebody will say, talk some smack about Christians in our community, and blah, they blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, quick question. How many of them do you actually know? Or is this like hearsay, or you know somebody who like hurt you in some kind of way? I'm trying to be, especially in the day in America right now that like you can't other people and all of this stuff. And I'm like, we shouldn't be othering them just because we might not understand them. I mean, that's, black and white folks are having this discourse right now, right? So I'm put in a lot of spaces and weird, like awkward, like leadership stuff where, I've been asked to give feedback to decisions being made on the citywide level. And I'm like, why am I sitting here? This is so awkward, But I'll be like, that's a family event. And, and I was talking to somebody specifically was sitting at the table because it was this dance thing that was going to happen in one of the biggest theaters. And that couple is known for performing in the nude. And I was like, guys, read the brief. We all need to read the brief. And if any of us decide that we have a need to be rebellious against the brief, and you're smack on the hand of the person who has the resources for us to actually have a performance opportunity for our dancers. And if we can't keep our clothes on and we can't find something in our repertory that's quality, that's family friendly, then maybe we should say no to this opportunity because it's not for us. I was looking right at them when I said it. And the woman that was holding that meeting pulled me aside later. It happens to be the lady that went to Easter Island with the first time. She was running the Performing Arts Center. She said, "Oh my God, I'm so glad you said that because I can't because I run the place." And I was like, "Man, she can't keep her clothes on. She shouldn't do this gig. It's like, that's not rocket science, man. You know, I mean, if you have like adult night out, have at it, hire them, you know, because they're going to let it all fly, you know." But so, you know, you have to be savvy.
Yes.
You have to know the language. You have to be able to speak the language. And you got to do it out of love for the people that don't know what they're doing.
Yes.
Ultimately. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
no.
We can love folks in these situations, man. It's just, you know, I think there's a calling to that.
But it's also, like you're saying, there's also a calling as to, yes, I understand what you're saying. However, this is my line. You know,
yeah,
and take it or leave it.
I'm crossing that line. Yeah, like even the woman I danced for in the 80s, she wanted to do this piece about Adam and Eve, and she wanted me to be Adam, and she's like, "When you come up from behind the set piece, you're going to be naked," and I'm like, "I ain't doing it." And I was like, "I think I just lost my job." She's like, "What do you mean you're not doing it?" I'm like, "Look, here's the reality. If I'm buck naked, or any guy on the stage is buck naked, we'll stop moving, and not all of us is going to stop moving at that moment.
Mm.
And it's going to be a distraction, and everybody's going to be focused on the genitals and not on what you're saying in your choreography. You're better than that." She never choreographed the piece.
Wow.
But I find that a lot of young up and coming artists, they don't have the chutzpah to, sorry, that's Yiddish. They don't know how to manage themselves in these situations to pull on their knowledge of the scriptures and the respect that they need to have for the non-Christian who has, you know, reputations of being evil or whatever.
Yeah.
Like to speak to them in an honoring way and call them out in a way that makes sense to them. And that's, you know, so I make dang well sure my dancers in my company, like when people start talking smack, let me give you some ammo. This is what you need to be thinking about. This is how you need to handle it. So I want to prepare the next generation of dance makers, not just people who can do what they're told.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time, good sir. I mean, I could talk for hours with you, or listen to you for hours, should I say, but unfortunately, time is beating us. And all I can say, Bill, is first of all, thank you very much indeed for joining us. And if people want to get hold of us, want to get hold of you, I'm sure they can through us at ogc@accessradio.biz. If they want to get hold of you, though, any other way, how can they do it, good sir?
The Gregor Company's website is Inlet Dance, I-N-L-E-T, the word dance, all one word, .org, inletdance.org.
Wow. We never even got a chance to talk about Inlet Dance either. But very briefly, how long has it been going?
We're in the middle of our 22nd season, just finished quarter one of the 22nd season.
Wow.
It's going. I mean, we're in this new building, 7,500 square feet, huge studios. It's a performance space. We do a lot of community stuff in this space. Yeah, it's crazy.
So if I was that 21-year-old, obviously the world's greatest dancer, could I write to you and say, "Oi, give me a chance to show how brilliant I am. Could I come over for an audition?"
Absolutely. I have auditions on Monday and Tuesday, actually.
Really? Let me have a look.
You better catch a flight, bruh.
I can't make it those days. But no, seriously, there might be somebody listening who goes, "This is just what my child should be doing."
Oh, so, yeah, no, that's okay. That's a good point. Yeah, just get on the company website. I mean, I have to have auditions, and the dancers always talking me into it. I hate auditions. I think they're dehumanizing, awful things.
Really?
I'm like, you're not a number on your chest. You're like a human being.
Right? Yeah.
So even the way we run our auditions is totally different. We do a day and a half long workshop.
All right.
And I'll know in the first 20 minutes if that's a yes or a no.
Yes.
But I want to honor the people that had spent their time and their money. Like, I happen to know there's a young man flying from Southern California, Orange County, California, to come to the audition on Monday. That costs money to fly to Cleveland from there. And it's a 5-hour flight. I've been done that. you know, I want him to leave feeling like he's actually gained a bunch of new friends and had an amazing day and a half with this dance company who shares, this is what we do and this is how we do it. It's more like that.
Wow. Well, that's me done. I'm coming over on Monday
then. There you go.
It remains 30 seconds. For those people that are saying to him, Off-Grid Christianity, he sounds a bit like me. What encouragement could you give to them in the final 30 seconds before I bring the curtain down?
I love the fact that no matter how, because I am prone to deviance and I stray and I don't mean to, it's not like an intentional thing.
What do you mean by deviance then?
I'm deviant, man. I mean, the behaviors and things are a lot less than they used to be when I was young. Mm-hmm. I was like the rebellious punk rocker with the hair and jacket and the safety pins and all this stuff. And I'm kind of sort of more grown now. And, but I'm a very curious person, and you know, I see lifestyle choices people make, and I really want to understand, like, what happens to a child that this is a logical conclusion, because there is a logic line. You got to find it. Sometimes you got to dig. But I mean, those are my people, man. You know, all the circus freaks and the people that most Christians run away from and call evil or wherever, whatever. And I'm like, no, come hang out with me. We'll have a beer. We'll talk about it. You know, his name is Jesus. You just don't know him yet. You know, kind of a thing. And I think that, you know, it's as a human being, we're all prone to deviance, like walking away from God.
Yeah.
Our little egos or whatever, or our undealt with issues from the past, which was my primary driver, actually, back in the day. You know, and those things, some of those traumas rear their head on occasion, and I have to monitor myself, pay attention, and go back to the Lord. No matter where I end up, he doesn't leave me. He never will. I read scripture and I'm reminded of that truth. And it just melts your heart. Yeah. It's so awesome. The Lord he loves us so much and we have no clue. I don't think our gray matter can actually contain that full knowledge. Mm. I don't think we got it in us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I said in the remaining 30 seconds, you've got 28 seconds left now. I've been able to shoehorn it in to give you another 28 seconds. So, now that people can identify more with you about what deviance means, all right?
Yeah.
They're saying, I'm there. Yeah. Come on, 28 seconds, 27 seconds, what would you say?
Just talk to the Lord, man. But you got to shut up on the inside and actually listen, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you might not like the answer, but obedience is just be obedient, because his desire for us is love and health and thriving. And we get to be, come at some point, a conduit of him doing his thing, and standing in that moment where you're being used as a conduit is just crazy cool, you know. And it just quells all the fear, and it just, you just watch God do his thing, and he is the master creator. And I just love him, watching him do his thing, you know, loving on folks, changing their lives.
And mine
too, right?
And look what you've achieved so far.
Yeah, it's weird. So somebody was reading my bio to me yesterday. I was like, man, you need to stop, because this is sounding like somebody else. I'm like, all those things did happen, but there's like lots of space between those events. You know, when you line them up, it just sounds like some freak.
I suppose really what you should do is get it to your wife to read it to you. And if she doesn't laugh halfway through, you know there's something seriously wrong with it.
That's a good idea. We've been at this for 30 years. And we just, in August was our 30th anniversary. We went out to dinner. We're like, this is weird. 30 is like a number.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're still at it. And a lot of people that we used to hang out with, they're not married anymore. So,
yeah. We obviously do.
Why ask why? Just keep going.
Yeah, no, it sounds brilliant what you're doing. Listen, Bill, thank you so much for joining us today.
So
it's been
fun
brilliant.
Meeting you, man.
Thank you so much, and we'll
I love you, bro.
Catch up with you soon. Thank you so much, sir.
Yes, absolutely.
Cheers. God bless.
Ciao.